This week on the R&B Money Podcast, Tank and Jay Valentine sit down with the one and only Snoop Dogg.
I wanted to be here personally to come give y'all flowers and let y'all know y'all doing an amazing job.
Yes, sir.
I love the outlet. I love how y'all treat the artists that come on here. I love how y'all speak to the realization of R&B music and R&B money.
Snoop Dogg on R&B Money. Listen to this episode on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Indicator is a podcast where daily economic news is about what matters to you. And we're guessing most days, that's money.
Workers have been feeling the sting of inflation.
So as a new administration promises action on the cost of living, taxes, and home prices...
The S&P 500 biggest post-election day spike ever.
Follow all the big changes and what they mean for you.
Make America affordable again.
Listen to The Indicator from NPR on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome to My Legacy. I'm Martin Luther King III, and together with my wife, Andrea Waters King, and our dear friends, Mark and Craig Kilberger, we explore the personal journeys that shape extraordinary lives.
Join us for heartfelt conversations with remarkable guests like David Oyelowo, Mel Robbins, Martin Sheen, Dr. Sanjay Gupta, and Billy Porter.
Listen to My Legacy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is My Legacy.
On June 17th, 2007, at around 2:30 a.m., bars emptied out into the streets of Camden, New Jersey. Amid the crowd in the parking lot of the 7th and Cane Lounge, gunshots struck 24-year-old Tierra Presley and 32-year-old Adrian Jackson. But only Jackson survived, and he was unable to offer any leads. About 6 months later, Jackson was secretly recorded speculating about the identity of his assailants, narrowing his suspects to someone called Baby J and later another called Papa Smurf, which led police to Manfred Younger and Anthony Parker, the latter of whom was acquitted, but two jailhouse informants claimed that Manfred Younger had admitted to being one of the shooters, sending him away for a minimum of 66 years. This is Wrongful Conviction. You're listening to Wrongful Conviction. You can listen to this and all the Lava for Good podcasts 1 week early and ad-free by subscribing to Lava for Good Plus on Apple Podcasts. Welcome back to Wrongful Conviction, where we've got a New Jersey case. There haven't been many of those featured here, but that's about to change. And calling in to tell his story from a New Jersey correctional facility, Manfred Younger. Manfred, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
And joining Manfred to help him tell this insane story is a voice you're going to recognize, Justin Bonus, who's been spending a great deal of time in Manfred's hometown of Camden, New Jersey, where he's uncovered quite a few cases in a town that has a history of poverty and corruption, from law enforcement all the way up to mayors who had promised urban renewal and economic revitalization.
Yeah, because there's no improvement ever in Camden. I think at one point they had four straight mayors that were federally indicted. And then there's a period from like 1990 to 2013 when the Camden County Police Department was so corrupt. Camden is basically taken over by the county. In 2012, right before there was a takeover, there were like 60 homicides in a city that's only like 75,000, 80,000 people the most. And they weren't solving them. And then the ones that they were solving, there's a lot of wrongful convictions. But there is a sweet spot that I'm working on from like 99 to like 2011. And the show starts for real with Martin Devlin. Him and his partner, Chuck Bentham, they come to Camden from Philly. And when Devlin became a supervisor, there's a pattern of single photo identifications and jailhouse informants.
Which is exactly what we're dealing with in this case. In our audience, you might recall Detective Martin Devlin from some Philly cases that we covered. Jimmy Dennis, Tony Wright, Walter Ograd, Troy Coleman. And after plying
his trade in Philadelphia. For 25 long years, he crossed over the bridge into one of the most impoverished cities in all of America, Camden, New Jersey, where he continued his career as an investigator in the Camden County Prosecutor's Office while Manfred was growing up.
Yeah, I grew up in the city of Camden. I've been with my mom and my sister and my father. My father named Manfred J. Younger Sr., so my name Manfred J. Younger Jr., so I got the baby J after my father. I grew up playing community football and stuff. I was good, but we grew up hard. City of Camden, the poverty, it's messed up out there. We didn't have hot water. We had to heat the house up with the oven, boil hot water on the stove, you know, wear each other's clothes, wear your friends' clothes. When it rained, when it's a thunderstorm or snowstorm, it come through the ceiling. It was bad in Camden. 95% of the people is poor. And because our population is only 70,000 people, we get overlooked. But the only reason why we get noticed is because of the crime rate. Other than that, we don't have nothing. Your mom and them had to have money, though, like growing up. If not, you had to go to the streets. It ain't an excuse, but times get hard, desperation. And that's when I went to the streets.
By Manfred's perspective, dealing drugs and carrying a gun was necessary for survival in Camden, all of which made him vulnerable to prosecution as well as violence, street violence. And one of the victims in this case, Adrian Jackson, well, he was in the same boat, although he wasn't exactly Manfred's contemporary.
Adrian Jackson is significantly older than Manfred Younger by a lot. Everyone believed that Adrian Jackson was the target. He has issues with older people in the drug world in Camden, who Manfred had some type of affiliation with, but there was never any real connection here.
I ain't never hang with him or nothing like that. All them guys older than me.
Adrian Jackson had also cooperated in a case in the late 90s, so there were motivated parties on the night that he was shot, none of whom were Manfred. And along with Jackson, an innocent young woman named Tierra Presley had also been shot. It was a Saturday night, June 16th, into the early hours of June 17th, 2007, when both victims were out on the town with Tierra's cousin, Tia Hanna.
They're at a place called 7th and Kane in what they would consider the downtown area of Camden, New Jersey. At around 2:30 in the morning is when they leave out of the bar.
Last call is 2 a.m. in New Jersey, so everyone else was leaving with them, emptying out into this dirt parking lot next to the bar that was adjacent to the projects. Now, it was a warm night where folks were already hanging out in front of their buildings as well.
And Adrian Jackson is talking to Tierra. And Tia, I guess, walked off a little bit with another woman named Maisha Ronette Brown. It's not well lit. And two men came out of nowhere and fired a lot of shots. Presley was hit 6-7 times. Jackson was hit over 10 times. The way he shot it, it's very difficult to determine whether he could have seen it because he's like shot in the side and then he's like spun around when he shot.
Tia Hanna and a man named John Fralin ushered Tierra into her car and drove her to the hospital. Curiously, though, without Adrian Jackson.
Yeah, Jackson stays at the scene and he's just standing there and people are like freaked out. His adrenaline had kicked in so much. And then at some point, I think he sits down and passes out or something. And then he gets picked up. An ambulance takes him to the hospital.
So by the time police had arrived, the crowd had dispersed, including Maisha Ronette Brown and her boyfriend, Richard Barge, who becomes important later. But for now, the police forego a vigorous canvas for eyewitnesses. And instead, they hope to speak with the victims as well as Tia Hanna.
Jackson lived, amazingly. Tierra dies, unfortunately. This was an innocent girl that was killed. Everybody knew that. This was a very big deal. These are not people that didn't want to cooperate. But Tia Hanna tells the prosecutor's office investigator, Diane Wilson, over and over again, I can't make an ID, right? And Jackson, I mean, it's only by the grace of God that this man's alive. I mean, he spun around like a top. He was in the hospital for over a month before he became coherent to speak. And I mean, Adrian Jackson's a criminal. Okay. He has a terrible background. But let me be clear with you. Adrian Jackson cooperated before. So this is not a guy that's apprehensive to talk to the police. And Adrian Jackson tells them, look, I was drunk when I came out. I don't know who shot me. And he's like, you seem like you don't believe me. If I knew who it was, I would tell you.
And so without any legitimate leads, the investigation kind of switched course. It changed tactics right around the same time that Manfred was arrested for an unrelated matter on July 15th, 2007, possession of an illegal firearm.
I'm from the city of Camden, so I got caught with a weapon. That's the only way you know how to protect yourself. I was in the corner store getting something to eat, and then the cops ran in there because they were doing a search of like a drug area, and then they searched me. I had a gun on me. I didn't have it legally. So anytime, say if a homicide happened or a shooting happened, and you might get locked up for drugs or whatever, being as though if you're from that area where it happened, they would try to question you and get you to act like you know something. You see what I'm saying? And Diane Wilson, she comes in there. I don't know her. She don't know me. So being as though I'm young, she probably figured like, oh, well, he might want to get out of this case. So she started asking me about crimes around the area, not just this murder, several murders. And I'm like, man, I don't know nothing. So that was my first run-in with her. So now that's where she was familiar with the name Baby J. But I had bailed out from that weapon trust. I came back home. 3 days after I was home, I had another case out in another county, Gloucester County. I had drugs that time. I pled guilty to probation and 90-day sentence. So I went to Gloucester County for like 72 days. Then I came home September 24th.
And while Manfred was still in Gloucester County Jail on the drug charge, Diane Wilson interviewed Adrian Jackson again on September 6, 2007.
They press him again, okay? And I believe they actually drop Manfred's name and nickname, which is Baby J. The important part about that nickname is there's five other Baby J's in Camden. Jackson again tells them, I don't know who shot me, okay? And the date of that second interview for Adrian Jackson is a very big deal.
And we'll get to why in just a minute. But first, around 3 weeks later, Manfred was released from Gloucester County and was picked up again 3 days after his release on September 27th with his friend, Jeffrey Jones.
Well, we got pulled over by Camden County Police, but we got the dispatch from the police station where that cop said, I'm behind that van with Baby J and them in there. So obviously somebody had to tell him about who was in the van. You get what I'm saying? He lied on a report and said we was driving fast, basically like it was a regular traffic stop, and I had a gun. Remember, I was convicted already for the drug. Once you get a conviction, the state chooses to turn it over to the Fed. That's when the federal could charge you. It's called possession of a weapon by a convicted felon. And I got locked back up September 27th. 3 days, I was home. So I had a pool attorney. The first thing he said is, they don't want you. They want your boy. Jones was my co-defendant. They believe that I know all this stuff. Like, I don't know that guy like that. So basically, he was saying, like, yo, if you give up information on him, they'll let you go. So I'm just collateral damage. I took a flat rate plea, 60 months for the gun charge. All this was in 2007, and I never seen the streets again.
5 years in federal prison was able to eventually morph into a much longer state sentence, starting with a man named Troy Lone.
Troy Lone got caught with a gun, and he wanted the way out of prison. So he told Detective Wilson that Adrian Jackson told him who did that to him. So Troy Lone wore a tape recorder on Jackson, and on the tape recorder, Jackson, he ain't say he seen nobody or nothing. He was speculating, and they was talking about all these other old murders and Jackson admitting to the drug game. He's also on wiretap saying he lied in another murder trial and then placed himself at a scene of a murder, and he wasn't even there. So he's already got a pattern of lying, fabricating stories.
But the prosecutor's office doesn't care about that. And this is what's so outrageous about this surreptitious audio recording. He's going through in his mind who he thinks may or may not have done this. So Jackson starts talking about the fact that he has beef with these older gentlemen and who is affiliated with these older gentlemen. And now understand this. He knows a nickname, which is Baby J. He admits he doesn't know Baby J. And in this conversation between him and Troy Lone, he said it couldn't have been this guy named Sean, so it had to be Baby J. And then he mentions that another guy is a driver. Understand this. There were multiple people that watched two shooters run from the scene and not get into a car. They just ran from the scene, right? So he's guessing. And by the process of elimination, he says it's probably Baby J.
As we know, Baby J also happens to be Manfred's nickname, but he's not the only Baby J in Camden. The other nickname Jackson eventually mentioned was Papa Smurf, a.k.a. Anthony Parker, who in turn became Manfred's co-defendant.
Interestingly, with Jackson, in the audio to Troy Lone, he did not identify Papa Smurf initially, Anthony Parker. And again, this goes to show you that this guy, Jackson, is just guessing.
And Jackson's unreliability was also made clear by something else that he said on this audio recording.
Jackson specifically said that on September 6th of 2007, when he came out of the prosecutor's office after they're asking him about Manfred Younger, and he doesn't know who this is, that he sees Baby J driving and he wanted to kill him and doesn't do it because it's broad daylight. So there's a huge problem with that, which is that Manfred Younger is incarcerated at that point. So whoever he saw could not have been Baby J, or at least a Baby J that's Manfred Younger. It's impossible.
This episode of Wrongful Conviction is proudly sponsored by Erase PTSD Now. Every day, countless individuals face the invisible wounds of trauma and PTSD. Your support empowers us to provide life-changing treatments like the stellate ganglion block, SGB, which inhibits nerve impulses and helps to restore hope, reclaim lives, and save lives after incarceration. Together, we can ensure that those wrongfully convicted receive the care they need to heal and reintegrate into society. Join us in this mission to erase PTSD and uplift our communities. Visit erasePTSDnow.org. That's erasePTSDnow.org for more information and ways to get involved.
The Indicator is a podcast where daily economic news is about what matters to you. And we're guessing most days, that's money.
Workers have been feeling the sting of inflation.
So as a new administration promises action on the cost of living, taxes, and home prices,
the S&P 500 biggest post-election day spike ever.
Follow all the big changes and what they mean for you.
Make America affordable again.
Listen to The Indicator from NPR on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get podcasts.
Everyone's forgotten who runs this valley. Time to remind them.
Yellowstone fans, step into the Yellowstone universe.
Our family legacy is this ranch.
And I'll protect it with my life.
Hosted by Bobby Bones, the official Yellowstone podcast takes you deeper into the franchise that's captivated millions worldwide.
Action!
Explore untold behind-the-scenes stories, exclusive cast interviews, and in-depth discussions about the themes and legacy of Yellowstone.
You know, the first Duttons to settle this valley fighting was all they knew.
Whether you're a longtime fan or new to the ranch,
welcome to the Yellowstone.
Bobby Bones has everything you need to stay connected to the Yellowstone phenomenon.
I look forward to it.
Listen to the official Yellowstone podcast now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's go to work.
I'm so sick of hearing men talk about women's basketball. If only there were a professional WNBA player with her own podcast I could listen to.
Hey, this is Lexi Brown, WNBA player and professional yapper.
And this is Mariah Rose. You may know me from Spilling the Tea on Hoops for Hotties on TikTok.
And we've got a new podcast, Full Circle.
Every Wednesday, we're catching you up on what's going on in women's basketball. And not just in the WNBA, but with Athletes Unlimited, Unrivaled, and college basketball.
We've got you with analysis, inside stories, and a little bit of tea. I know you guys have seen a lot of former and current basketball players telling their stories from their point of view, and I just think it's time for the girlies to tap in.
We want to share all of the women's basketball stories that you won't see anywhere else.
Tune in to Full Circle, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment. You can find us on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by Capital One, founding partner of iHeart Women's Sports.
The name Baby J came up. That's when Diane Wilson went full throttle. She called Jackson and said, "We got new information. You know who did this to you." Jackson stated again, "I told you I don't know who it was." But when she pushed play, he got scared for all the incriminating statements he made about being a big-time drug dealer, having guns. And he gave the name Baby J with no hairstyle, no nothing, no race, no nothing. So she went and got one picture of me and showed him.
Diane Wilson shows him a photo and says, this is the guy, right? He says, yes.
They went to him with one photo, not a photo array, one photo of me.
That is the evidence that gets Manfred Younger arrested.
At this point, it's summer 2008. Manfred was already in federal custody on the September 27th gun charge, and he was brought in for his arraignment.
I go in the courtroom to get my bail. Diane Wilson get Tia Hanna, and Tia Hanna, own words, Diane Wilson get her to point me out at her arraignment hearing.
She's very adamant that she couldn't make an identification until the arraignment. And I mean, come on, the guy's getting arraigned for the murder of your cousin. And she's with Diane Wilson, Tierra Presley's family. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, a year and a half later, you say, yeah, he's the one. So Diane Wilson and the Camden City Police know that they have a really weak case. And Devlin is supervising this. And we have a pattern here of they then go to the jailhouse informants, which is Jamie Channer and Jamal Gibbs.
When you go to federal prison, if you're from Jersey, you roll with Jersey people. If you're Muslim, you run with the Muslims. If you, whatever clique you run with, that's your crew. So amongst your crew, you got people who's productive for the people of your crew. And you need help with your case, you go to the Muslim paralegal. Channer, he was our paralegal.
Jamie Channer was a jailhouse lawyer that helped Manfred with the, I believe it's the extradition process for a gun charge that is totally unrelated. So he sees the probable cause statement, the criminal complaint come through. So he knows the name of the deceased and the guy who gets shot doesn't know anything other than that.
He writes Camden County Prosecutor Office and bargain with them and say, I know information about a murder, but I want 3 years off. He didn't give the information in the initial letter. You see what I'm saying? So Diane Wilson calls him.
Jamie Channer says, hey, this guy admitted to this murder. Over and over and over again, he's writing letters to Diane Wilson. And the information was basically wrong and develops over time.
She spoke to that guy 5 times. If I tell you I have a red Mustang today, 5 years later, I should tell you I have a red Mustang. And every time he talked to her, he come back with additional information.
Even after 5 conversations, he still got the details wrong. In the statement that developed, Channer said that Jackson shielded himself behind Presley, which is contradicted by witnesses and the forensics. Then he gets the motive wrong as well.
Channer said it was a gang-initiated motive, a blood initiation. Diane Wilson stipulated that she knew I wasn't blood in. That wasn't even a motive, but she still allowed him to say that in front of a jury.
Then in comes Jamal Gibbs.
In October of 2009, they go get Jamal Gibbs, who's a serial cooperator. Now, Jamal Gibbs' handler is Jim Pisano, but Jamal Gibbs is very close friends with Martin Devlin. I have information from another case that Gibbs actually refers to Martin Devlin as Sarge doing an interview. The cops know exactly who he's talking about. Devlin was supervising Manfred Younger's investigation. And Jamal Gibbs is an admitted killer. By this point, he's pled guilty. He's looking to get out of jail and says, presumably at the behest of Devlin, that Baby J admitted the homicide to me.
When I was in the county, he was on protective custody status. So it's no way we can interact. No way.
Interesting thing about that is by this point, Gibbs is cooperating against like 10 people. So everybody in the Camden County Jail knows that Jamal Gibbs is a cooperator.
He was jumping in people's cases. Like anytime your case is weak, Jamal Gibbs end up inside the case to corroborate the motive or a theory to strengthen the case. Like the whole jail knew, stay away from that guy because he'll lie and fabricate information to get out his own murder.
Why would Manfred Younger tell him he committed a murder?
Never mind that he didn't even have an opportunity to do so. Thankfully, other guys came forward to Manfred's attorney to discredit Gibbs, which became part of trial strategy. When Manfred and his co-defendant, Anthony Parker, were tried in March 2011, where the state had about 5 main witnesses, including Tia Hanna, who had previously ID'd Manfred at his arraignment.
She recants that ID at trial.
The prosecutor tried to get her to say it's me. Tia said, I don't know. I didn't see the guy's face. But she seen the description, a brown-skinned guy with short hair. So the prosecutor say, point to the brown skin guy.
Point to the brown skin guy.
My lawyer, he objects. Even the judge says that was wrong. It was teetering over the line.
And then she gives an affidavit recanting the ID and saying, this is my cousin. They basically coerced me into making an identification in this case.
John Fralin also testified about driving Tierra Presley to the hospital and how Tia Hanna had said even then that she couldn't identify the shooter.
Hannah's essentially eliminated, but again, the jury sees her point Manfred out in the courtroom.
The state also presented Troy Lone, who spoke about recording Jackson's speculation about his shooters, naming Baby J. Then Adrian Jackson ID'd Manfred as Baby J from the stand.
What the jury never hears is that on September 6th of 2007, when Adrian Jackson says he's leaving the prosecutor's office and says that he sees Manfred Younger and wanted to kill him, that could not have been Manfred Younger because Manfred Younger was incarcerated. It's my belief that the attorney did not present that information because he did not want to admit that his client had a criminal record in front of the jury. But that's a huge piece of evidence that Adrian Jackson did not know who Manfred Younger was, and his identification is wholly unreliable.
Then Adrian Jackson ID'd Anthony Parker as Papa Smurf. But the attorneys did cross-examine Jackson about not being able to identify his assailants for his first three interviews.
The evidence against Anthony Parker was strictly Adrian Jackson, and that's it. And look at who got acquitted and who got convicted. It's my belief. That's why the jailhouse informants were so critical in this case. I mean, they were mentioned in the opening statement, and then they were mentioned a lot in summation by the prosecutor.
And the jailhouse informants were focused solely on Manfred. As we already said, Jamie Lee Channer's statement was unsupported by reality. Manfred was not a Blood and was not ordered by the Bloods to kill Jackson. Diane Wilson stipulated to that. Additionally, Jackson had not used Presley as a human shield. There was no getaway driver. And he also said that Manfred did the shooting alone.
It's just shocking that you would lie like that. Even the ballistics show two shooters, two different guns, two different shell casings. All the witnesses say two shooters, but he lie and say, I did it myself. Like, the physical evidence outweighs what he talking about.
Jamie Lee Channer even admitted in his own trial testimony that after Manfred Younger left the federal facility that he was in, he was getting more information to give to the prosecutor. Are you kidding me? That means that he presumably was being fed information from the prosecutor's office. The whole purpose of a jailhouse informant is the person says out of their mouth that they committed this crime, right? It's called a statement against penal interest. It goes against the defendant's interest to admit to committing a crime. So, therefore, it is assumed that those statements are reliable. The problem with that is, when you have a witness that has a tremendous incentive to lie about what that person said.
The prosecutor lied and said she didn't give him nothing. He lied and said he was coming forward to protect the public, but all along he got a favor.
Right after Manfred Younger gets sentenced, the prosecutor in the case writes a letter to a federal judge saying he provided substantial assistance, give him a time cut. But Jamie Channer says, I didn't get anything for my testimony.
And without this, and even more impeachment evidence that was discovered after trial, Channer's testimony appeared believable, as did Jamal Gibbs, who also claimed to have received nothing in return when he testified that he knew Presley from high school and pressed Gibbs about the senseless killing.
They used the professional snitch, Jamal Gibbs, to come up with a theory and a motive to inflame the jury.
The theory was that Jeffrey Jones, Manfred's co-defendant from the federal gun charge, ordered him to kill Jackson for some slight. And that Jackson grabbed Presley, again, with the unsupported human shield narrative. And Gibbs alleged that when pressed further, Manfred responded, and this is a quote, fuck that bitch. She all out there in the way, man. She got to get handled. 8-80, cripple and crazy. They can get it, man. It don't even matter, man. Fuck her. End quote. Which is incredibly inflammatory, obviously, but Manfred's lawyer had 7 rebuttal witnesses, including Milton Gardner and Brian Montanez.
Milton Gardner testifies that Gibbs is lying, what they call jumping on people's cases, that this is a practice of his of finding people's cases and getting on them from a time cut. And we have information that Gibbs was also getting discovery from the prosecutor's office, presumably Martin Devlin, to make his trial testimony more accurate. and that Gibbs was recruiting other people. Brian Montanez testified that he was approached by Jamal Gibbs, that Gibbs was actively seeking cooperators, and Montanez knew Martin Devlin because of Gibbs.
It's discovered later that even more witnesses had discredited Gibbs that didn't make it into the defense trial strategy, but at least some damage was done.
The prosecutor harped on the credibility of Jamie Lee Channor and Jamal Gibbs over and over again because the identification in the case was so weak.
At the time, you believe, like, these guys ain't got no credibility. The jury didn't believe Jackson. I had two readbacks on Channor and Gibbs. I trusted the process, thinking that the process was fair, but it obviously is not. Basically, they went with Channor and Gibbs. And then that's when they came back with the guilty verdict. I didn't even go in there. I was in the bullpen because something had happened with the sheriff's officer. So my lawyer basically came back and told me the news.
Consider This is a daily news podcast, and lately, the news is about a big question. How much can one guy change?
They want change.
What will change look like for energy?
Drill, baby, drill.
Schools?
Take the Department of Education, close it.
Healthcare?
Better and less expensive.
Follow coverage of a changing country.
Promises made, promises kept. We're going to keep our promises.
On Consider This from NPR. Listen on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Everyone's forgotten who runs this valley. Time to remind them.
Yellowstone fans, step into the Yellowstone universe.
Our family legacy is this ranch.
And I'll protect it with my life.
Hosted by Bobby Bones, the official Yellowstone podcast takes you deeper into the franchise that's captivated millions worldwide.
Action!
Explore untold behind-the-scenes stories, exclusive cast interviews, and in-depth discussions about the themes and legacy of Yellowstone.
You know, the first Duttons to settle this valley fighting was all they knew.
Whether you're a longtime fan or new to the ranch,
welcome to the Yellowstone.
Bobby Bones has everything you need to stay connected to the Yellowstone phenomenon.
I look forward to it.
Listen to the official Yellowstone podcast now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's go to work.
I'm so sick of hearing men talk about women's basketball. If only there were a professional WNBA player with her own podcast I could listen to.
Hey, this is Lexi Brown, WNBA player and professional yapper.
And this is Mariah Rose. You may know me from Spilling the Tea on Hoops for Hotties on TikTok.
And we've got a new podcast, Full Circle.
Every Wednesday, we're catching you up on what's going on in women's basketball. And not just in the WNBA, but with Athletes Unlimited, Unrivaled, and college basketball.
We've got you with analysis, inside stories, and a little bit of tea. I know you guys have seen a lot of former and current basketball players telling their stories from their point of view, and I just think it's time for the girlies to tap in.
We want to share all of the women's basketball stories that you won't see anywhere else.
Tune in to Full Circle, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment. You can find us on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by Capital One, founding partner of iHeart Women's Sports.
Manfred received two consecutive sentences, 60 years for the murder and 18 years for the attempted murder. A 78-year sentence with parole eligibility after 66 years. And the sentence began while he was serving out his 5-year federal sentence.
Most of my time I stayed in the county because I had the court situation with this case, so the time almost was up anyway. You believe that the appeal process take like a year, 18 months, but I had time anyway, so that's how I looked at it. Like, I'll be back on appeal, so... Then after that, I came here from Camden County. I'm in New Jersey State Prison now, maximum secure facility. In federal prison, you get to go out all day from 6:30 a.m. to 9 p.m. You out the room, but here you locked down all day. Basically, you get yard every other day. You get to shower. You get to use the kiosk. The cell is the size of like a bathroom, smaller than the bathroom. 4x6L. I work out, listen to music, talk to my family, watch TV, and for the most part, follow the law. It's hard, man. A lot of guys lose their mind down here. It's a rough spot, but you just got to only focus is to get out of jail. When I came here, my mind frame, like I said, you be thinking you trust the process because you innocent. So you get a lawyer on direct appeal automatically. God that don't know no better, leave it up to the lawyer and they don't do no research. But I still was young, so I came down here playing basketball, running around. So my mind frame was let the lawyer do everything. So then as I got older and start figuring her out, now I help the lawyer. I cut my TV off and went through all my trial transcripts and stuff. That's when I start finding new evidence that wasn't presented at trial that basically shows and proves that I've been framed at this crime.
One major development was Richard Barge. Not only was he another Jamal Gibbs victim, but he also was an eyewitness who had come forward to Manfred's attorney pre-trial.
When we was in the county back in 2009, he was like, yo, man, tell your lawyer to contact me, man. You ain't do that shit. So I told my lawyer about it, so he went to see Richard Barge.
And he tells him that he was out there that night with a woman who Tia Hanna says is at the scene.
And that girlfriend was Myesha Brown, the person Tia Hanna was next to when the shots rang out.
He says that Manfred Younger isn't one of the shooters, that he was actually standing in the general vicinity of where Adrian Jackson and Tierra Presley were standing when the shots rang out. And he knows Manfred Younger. And he says that Younger is not one of the shooters. Unfortunately, Manfred Younger's lawyer never calls Richard Barge.
My lawyer was like, well, I believe he was there, but the jury might not believe him because both of y'all got Jamal Gibbs in y'all case.
Which seems like a colossal lapse in judgment, considering what Jamal Gibbs testified to in Barge's trial.
In Richard Barge's case, he actually testified that Richard Barge admitted to a homicide via sign language.
But when this ineffective counsel claim was presented at a post-conviction hearing, Manfred's attorney was also called to the stand, where he had trouble recalling his interaction with Richard Barge or with Manfred about using Barge.
Yeah, he was old already. He was 80 years old. So when he came to the PCR hearing, he was even way, like, off track.
Nevertheless, the judge decided to err on the side of defense counsel's murky recollection of his final trial after a 36-year career. But this wasn't defense counsel's only misstep. As we mentioned, counsel never raised the problem with Jackson's ID, illustrated by his alleged spotting of Baby J on September 6, 2007, while Manfred was incarcerated in Gloucester County Jail. So Manfred's PCR motion was denied in 2018, but so much more has been discovered since then.
Number one, that Jamie Lee Channer, who testified at trial, he did not receive a benefit, that he was doing this out of the kindness of his heart. He absolutely received a benefit. He received a time cut. He received support from the Camden County Prosecutor's Office to get out of jail. Jamal Gibbs testified that he was not receiving anything for his testimony. Now, this guy pled guilty to manslaughter. He's a killer, Jamal Gibbs. He pleads guilty to manslaughter. At sentencing, the judge is going to hear all the cooperation, right, and consider that in. So his trial testimony that he already received his deal, that he expects to get 5 years. That's what he says. I expect to get 5 years. Guy gets 5 years for killing a person. It turns out he got money and housing for his testimony.
So he got money, housing, and the sweet deal of just 5 years for murder. Wow.
And what's interesting about this guy is this. His child's mother comes forward and says that he admitted to her that he was lying in cases to get out of jail. I forget what his saying is. Why do 10 when you can lie on 10? All this. Why do 10 when you can lie on a friend or something like that? That was his thing. And it's come out in the investigation. He did not like Manfred Younger. But his baby mother comes forward, provides a sworn statement to an investigator, says that he admitted to lying in cases to her and that he shot up her house because he thought she was talking to the Camden County prosecutors. The second he gets out of jail, he shoots her house up. She goes to the Camden County prosecutor's office and they bury it. They refuse to help her.
So we've established that Channer and Gibbs were not telling the truth and were incentivized to lie. But now there are witnesses to corroborate Richard Barge's statement and Manfred's innocence.
There's a gentleman by the name of Antoine Stanley who was also out there that night who said that he sees the shooters run up and that Manfred Younger couldn't have been one of them. He knew Manfred Younger. Couldn't be Manfred Younger. Another witness, Daryl Demby, Troy Lone's nephew, by the way, who actually says that Troy Lone suggested to Adrian Jackson that Baby J was the killer.
And then, of course, there's what has come out about Martin Devlin in Philadelphia. And it appears that his conduct only continued in Camden. The single photo identifications supported by incentivized jailhouse snitches.
It's a pattern in that office that begins to really take shape in the 90s. And guess who arrived in the 90s? Martin Devlin. I mean, they have a pattern of saying that if you live in Camden, then you know everybody in Camden. Therefore, we can just show anyone a single photo and let them identify anybody. Everybody knows everybody in Camden if you ask the Camden Police Department and the prosecutor's office. Everybody knows everybody. That's just not true. It's systemic. It's endemic. Manfred Younger, from my investigation, is an innocent man that's been sitting in prison for 15 years for a crime he didn't commit, a murder he didn't commit. And this is something he's been fighting since day one.
After Justin picked up Manfred's case in 2022, he shared the case with the New Jersey Attorney General's Conviction Review Unit, but they ran into trouble.
It's actually quite heartbreaking because that CRU in New Jersey, they did not finish their investigation. And essentially, there's deadlines with evidence. And it's within a year of me discovering the deal that Jamie Channer gets, I had to go to the court with that. So I had to essentially make a move for Manfred because I can't let a Brady claim as strong as what we have with Jamie Lee Channer sit, that he received a deal when really his testimony was he was a saint, you know what I mean? Like he's Mother Teresa or something.
Just
like
a concerned citizen.
Out of the goodness of his heart. The guy's a liar. I couldn't do that. And I've discovered other evidence that with Gibbs, I mean, we knew that Gibbs had got money in housing.
Jamal Gibbs got paid $10,000 in a house and he lied in other cases and they didn't turn that over.
And now we have confirmation of that. He cooperated in more. I think they mentioned four cases to defense counsel that he cooperated in. He cooperated in over 10. And that's astounding in a place as small as Camden. I mean, it's like, so everybody who committed a murder that was sitting in Camden County Jail is telling you that they committed the murder.
And Gibbs, he just recently recanted to the attorney general office saying I didn't tell him nothing. He admitted that I didn't confess to him. This is new. All this new.
The plan is to file a PCR based upon actual innocence, significant Brady violations, based upon what's called a fraud upon the court, which is that witnesses lied at trial and the prosecutor knew that they lied at trial by the prosecutor's own file.
Is there anything that our audience could do to help besides sharing this episode? Obviously, as at least a first step.
Oh, yeah. I just want y'all to support. You hear what's going on. Everything I'm saying is facts. It's not freestyling. It's facts. It's documented. Everything is on paper.
Number one, they need to reach out to Matthew Plotkin, who's the attorney general, about Camden County. Number two, they should write the governor. But number three, they need to really put pressure on the Camden County prosecutor's office.
You could go to my Instagram and check everything out, free_Manfred, and you get to see with your own eye.
Well, we're going to have that link in the episode description. And with that, we're going to go to closing arguments, where, first of all, I thank both of you from the bottom of my heart for joining us. And now I'm just going to kick back in my chair with my microphone off and my headphones on and just listen to anything else you feel is left to be said. Justin, you're going to go first. Manfred, you'll take us off into the sunset.
Manfred is not the only case like this. Okay. I represented a gentleman by the name of Teron Hill who was exonerated in 2021. And Teron Hill, almost spot on with Manfred, single photo, two jailhouse informants. And through the course of the Attorney General's Conviction Review Unit's investigation, determined that the jailhouse informants were unreliable. One of them recanted at trial. And then the identification of Teron Hill was unreliable because of the single photo. Same thing as Manfred Younger. And I have other cases in Camden County. This is systemic. What's going on here? They took this man and they threw him in the garbage can. His mother's getting up in age. He does not want to die in prison. It's heartbreaking. And the Camden County Prosecutor's Office thinks that people are just going to go away. I'm not going away. My name is Justin Bonus. Nice to meet you.
It ain't just me. It's the same pattern with the same guy that pops up in everybody's case. It's four guys down here with me now, and they got one single photo, jailhouse snitch. Richard Bars, one photo with the same jailhouse snitch. Jamal Gibbs is in about 15 cases, murder cases, just to save his own behind because he had his own murder trial. He got 5 years for his own case, murder, attempted murder, bank robbery, and $10,000 in the house just to fabricate stories on innocent people. It's the same pattern, same group of detectives, Diane Wilson, Jane Sassano, Martin Devlin, Jane Bruno. It's the same detective, same pattern, same wrongdoing in the city of Camden, New Jersey. All they care about is conviction. And the problem is, being as though we come from a poor young black community, we don't have the resources or we don't have media attention, so they get away with it. And then the judges and the prosecutors, they took an oath to do the right thing, but they don't. They dirty, they do people wrong. All they care about is the conviction. And we don't have nobody to help us. We need all the help we can get. Any exposure, any help of the city of Camden.
Thank you for listening to Wrongful Conviction. You can listen to this and all the Lava for Good podcasts 1 week early and ad-free by subscribing to Lava for Good Plus on Apple Podcasts. I want to thank our production team, Connor Hall and Kathleen Fink, as well as my fellow executive producers, Jeff Kempler, Kevin Wardis, and Jeff Clyburn. The music in this production was supplied by three-time Oscar-nominated composer, Jay Ralph. Be sure to follow us across all social media platforms at Lava for Good and at Wrongful Conviction. You can also follow me on Instagram at It's Jason Flom. Wrongful Conviction is a production of Lava for Good Podcasts in association with Signal Company No. 1.
We have worked hard to ensure that all facts reported in this show are accurate. The views and opinions expressed by the individuals featured in this show are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of Lava for Good.
This week on the R&B Money Podcast, Tank and Jay Valentine sit down with the one and only Snoop Dogg.
I wanted to be here personally to come give y'all flowers and let y'all know y'all doing an amazing job.
Yes, sir.
I love the outlet. I love how y'all treat the artists that come on here. I love how y'all speak to the realization of R&B music and R&B money.
Snoop Dogg on R&B Money. Listen to this episode on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Consider This is a daily news podcast, and lately, the news is about a big question. How much can one guy change?
They want change.
What will change look like for energy?
Drill, baby, drill.
Schools?
Take the Department of Education, close it.
Healthcare?
Better and less expensive.
Follow coverage of a changing country.
Promises made, promises kept. We're going to keep our promises.
On Consider This from NPR. Listen on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm so sick of hearing men talk about women's basketball.
This is Lexi Brown.
And Mariah Rose.
And we've got a new podcast, Full Circle.
Every Wednesday, we're catching you up on what's going on in women's basketball.
We've got you with analysis, inside stories, and a little bit of tea.
Full Circle is an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment. Listen to Full Circle on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by e.l.f. Beauty, founding partner of iHeart Women's Sports.